The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Open line through till one today, so whatever's on your mind, doesn't matter whether it's deeply serious or frivolous, whatever it is, Man in Line's there for you to have your say about what's on your mind. Call 66 13 68, text or WhatsApp on 166 177, email studio@manxradio.com. I don't know whether you heard Michelle Hayward, MHK, yesterday, who announced that she's standing for a second term in Russian, and what she had to say about many things, including online abuse. Also, it was the conduct of commissioners, also the DOI, also the promenade, everything. Any thoughts on what she had to say, by all means, do get in touch. But, of course, the big story at the moment is the upward pressure affecting international fuel markets, feeding through to the Manx fuel supply. Well, the Chief Minister told the House of Keys this morning that we will see an increase in fuel prices on the Isle of Man in the coming week. There was an urgent statement given to members, and Mr. Cannon said the government's working with the fuel suppliers, the regulator, OFT, and monitoring the rapidly evolving situation. This is the Chief Minister.
In the past 5 years, if they've taught us anything, it is that our island is not immune from the impact of global events. The recent events in the Middle East are no exception. One of the most significant areas of local impact to come will be on fuel prices. Since the start of the war, the island has been relatively shielded due to the infrequent way our supplies arrive when compared to the adjacent isle. However, the upward pressure on the international fuel markets is now feeding through into the island's fuel supply, which will result in an increase in local fuel prices in the coming week. I want to reassure members and the public that this government is working closely with the fuel suppliers, the regulators and the Office of Fair Trading to monitor this rapidly evolving situation. It is important to be clear, there is no fuel supply shortage on the island and there are currently no threats to our supply chain. Both major fuel suppliers have confirmed that deliveries remain on schedule and refinery loadings are proceeding as planned with no foreseen disruption to physical supply. This is consistent with recent operational updates showing stable stock levels, even as demand has temporarily increased due to public concern. I do know, though, there will be significant price rises that will feed through to our shores over the coming days, and these price increases will cause concern for many. Of particular concern will be the potential significant increases in home heating oil for those in our community who rely on this method. The local fuel suppliers have confirmed they are monitoring the position, particularly with respect to vulnerable customers, and will continue to do so. I can also confirm to honourable members that the Council of Ministers is monitoring the situation closely through the Economic and National Strategy Board, which met again this morning and will meet again tomorrow. We will continue to develop a range of options to support the most vulnerable in our community should they be needed.
Well, that's the Chief Minister. So if you've got any thoughts on what he had to say, or whether or not you actually think this affects us, because obviously we don't have enormous long journeys that have to be made. Nobody drives 65 miles or so to and from the office. I just wonder what your thoughts are with this. Of course, it may be we can start using the buses again more. You never know, do you? It's always a thought. Text, email, call, WhatsApp, or maybe this is the active travel we get on our bikes. Right, let's get back to the photo. Oh, comment. First of all, let's get to a comment. Lots of stuff we didn't get to yesterday. It was very busy yesterday. And this is a note in from Brian. Hello, Brian, who just said, regarding Dr. Hayward, regarding the contractual problems with Bus Vannin and no sign of a settlement. Don't you think it's a bit unfair that MHKs who don't get re-elected at the next election should receive a settlement grant of a third of their salary? Would it not be fairer that they should only receive a week's salary per year that they've been a member of Timworld? This has been the norm for employment contracts generally after they've received a decent salary for the past 5 years. I would even go as far to say that they should receive 1 week's salary based on what they've earned in their previous employment before they became an MHK, as a lot of MHKs are being paid well above their pay grade. So that was Brian's point yesterday. Have you got any thoughts on that? By all means, it's worth saying, Brian, it has to be, when he said that some people have earned a decent salary. To a lot of people on Athol Street, what the MHKs earn would be a pittance. In fact, there are many people who earn well above, what is it, 80-odd thousand a year. Don't look at me, but there are many people who earn way above that. So a decent salary is it's a relative expression, isn't it? But anyway, it's a thought. And remember, it's a contractual thing that happens when you become an MHK. If you stand and don't get re-elected, then you get a settlement of, I think it's 6 months' salary. But anyway, thoughts on that? Anything else, by all means, do get in touch. And let's get to the lines. It is Robert. Hi, Robert.
Hi, how you doing?
Well, very well, thank you.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a Freudian slip or whatever, but I want to meet it out anyway. Why did Manx Radio... That's a Freudian slip. Why did Manx Airlines go under... What was the, I've forgotten why they went under.
Oh, it didn't go under. It was sold. Somebody else bought it.
Sold.
British Airways bought their parent company. British Airways bought their parent company. Manx Airlines was owned by a company. It was part of a company. And then British Airways...
What was that company?
Oh, crikey. You're telling me, aren't you? Was it British... British Regional. Anyway, British Airways bought it. The Isle of Man was given the opportunity. The government was given the opportunity at the time to buy Manx Airlines and passed on it, didn't want to buy it. So, yes, it disappeared.
So they had the opportunity to buy it when they wanted to, and they washed their hands of it, basically.
Well, they didn't want to purchase the airline. That's my understanding, anyway.
What difference would that have made if that had gone through and we would have had it?
Well, we'd own an airline.
Would that be a good thing?
Well, you tell me. What do you think? I mean, owning an airline, it's not just an upside. I mean, airlines can lose money as well as make money. In fact, the one that the Channel Islands governments own, I think it's Guernsey, own Aurigny Airways, that loses about £7 million a year.
£7 million. So it'd be a loss earner, basically. That's why we didn't get it.
Well, the thing is that it may be a loss. Sometimes it may make money. But the problem is, I mean, what it would do is give us security and would make sure that the airlines, and would also, it's fair to say, Manx Airlines employed a real chunk of people over here, from everybody from, the you can't say hostesses now, can you? Flight attendants now,
no.
And pilots, yeah. To people who used to service engines. You know, they employed an awful lot of people. It was a high skill base over here, and it's gone.
So what you're saying is basically, if the government would have owned the steam packet as well as the airlines, then it'd be hard for another person to come in. So it's good that we've got the free market now to fill that gap.
In what? In airlines?
Well, we've got other options like Logan Air, don't we?
Well, we have a thing called Open Skies, which means the policy is Open
yes.
Skies, which means that anybody can come and service the Isle of Man, can fly in and out of the Isle of Man. By that same token, you can also get what's called predatory pricing. In that, if
I know what I've done there.
Yeah, if one airline comes in and makes a success of a route, then another airline can come in and you can, basically, if it's a bigger airline, can almost put the other one out of business. So the Open Skies is kind of, it's got an upside and a downside.
Well, without mistaking you for Stu Peters, I think that was a mistake, and I think we should have bought Manx Airlines at that stage, but the fact that we didn't is the mess we're in now.
Right, jolly good. Okay, all right, good to hear from you.
All right, thanks a lot. Bye.
According to aviation industry records, BA bought the parent company that owned Manx Airlines in 2001. The airline was then merged into British Airways City Express, which meant that Manx Airlines' name and identity were then phased out. That lovely green logo suddenly disappeared. The airline stopped operating on the 31st of August 2002 when the final flight landed at Ronald's Way. Of course, there were other Manx-based airlines. We had Euromanx, Manx 2, Citywing, but the companies eventually ceased trading due to competition, fuel costs and passenger numbers. So the reason we don't have Manx Airlines is essentially airline industry consolidation. It was bought out and merged into a bigger airline and then it disappeared. It's worth saying this, and I say this every time, when I started Man in Line in October 1998, the two things that took up, well, actually, there were three things that took up Man in Line all the time then, were inevitably what dogs do, the brand new ship. Everybody hated the Ben McCree, hated the Ben McCree. It, of course, subsequently became a sainted deity and everybody loved the Ben McCree. But in 1998, everybody loathed it. And Manx Airlines. And the complaint about Manx Airlines then, and it got more brickbats than bouquets, was that it was too expensive. But it was very convenient, wasn't it? It was very convenient, turning up to Liverpool early for a flight and then putting you onto the earlier flight, just because. We had lots of planes, and they just about always flew, didn't they? Anyway, thoughts on that? Text, email, call, WhatsApp. Whether do you miss Manx Airlines? I certainly miss those three-legged chocolates. David's on now. Hi, David. It's blighted line two again. Howard's with us then.
Hey, Andy. I think he got a jinx on that one for him. No, just as you're saying about Manx Airlines, they were a good company, and I remember them starting up. We actually travelled in one of their little charter planes going across, nine-seater Navajo. They had it on charter. And when we went down to get on, this is the wife and I, put the luggage on for we weighed, and they said to us, would you get on the scales as well, please? So we had to stand on a scale there and be weighed prior to boarding the aircraft. But they did well, and that's one of the ATPs sitting down there now with Jim Ord on it, down at the Military Museum.
It's amazing. But, it's amazing. But, I mean, you'll probably remember this, but I remember the flack that Manx Airlines used to get at the time on Man in Line. People were always phoning in complaining about mainly the price, but of course, it used to always fly.
They did, and they had the pilots here. This is why a lot of the pilots, it's a different company altogether now, Logan Air, but some of the pilots who were flying Manx are flying Logan Air. You got one, Paul Quine there, ex-MHK, and Ashley Gardner, young Ashley. They are local, but I know some that left simply because they had to transfer to another company, and they were there. They weren't working from home, literally. And that's how local it was. The pilots worked from home. They came home at the Ronald's Way, got off the aircraft, jumped in their cars and went home. And that's how local it was. But, like everyone else, people are not happy with it. They whinge, moaned, and they're done exactly with the steam packet. And, and when something happens, you've got the Jersey, Guernsey, and they've got trouble down there now with the ships in their ability to provide a decent service.
Yeah. Well, they're always having problems in Jersey with... It was Condor, wasn't it, as well?
And it was, yeah. But now they've got two companies, and neither one is providing what you would call a first-class service. That they're providing a service. And there's one thing, too. One of the shipping companies coming in will bring the mail in, but won't take it out. So it's farcical. So let's not, be careful what you wish for with the steam packet. Of course, they're building up quite a larger number of passengers. The Ben McCree, which they were hell-bent on getting rid of, is earning money now down the south of England on charter. The Arrows up in the Western Isles earning money. But that's not what it come off of. It's just that was an afterthought for it. But listening to what you said before about the MHKs.
Yeah.
Now, if I were to put my name down to go for an MHK, which I'm not, I would be signing up to a five-year contract. And at the end of that contract, if I wasn't re-elected, that was no fault of the government or the taxpayers, because you, obviously, whoever it was not up to scratch. And as we just said to Chris, the contract is a five-year term, and they shouldn't be paid a six-month redundancy, is what it is. They're not redundant. The contract has ceased, and a new one has been brought on. Now, if you remember when they built the Sulby Reservoir, the first company up there was Shepherd Hill, and they completed their part of it, and the government at the time decided we'll double the size of it. But they didn't just carry on a revolving door exercise. Shepherd Hill and anybody of the firms had to put in a tender to complete, and Tarmac, I think it was, that won it, and they completed it up to the present height. So if the same principle applied to a private firm as it does to the government, then Shepherd Hill should have got half of what their contract was. So why should the MHKs receive half a year's wages on the supposedly we're not got any work, we can't find any, there's plenty of work out there, the private sector doesn't do that, and it's only because it's taxpayers' money that these people are able to do this quite openly, quite brazen. They should get the normal redundancy payment, which is a week for each year or something like that. I can't remember now exactly. But that's all they should get, not £40,000 if they don't get in. That's a nice little bonus if you walk out of there today and you've got a job waiting for you tomorrow. That's not a bad little bonus at the end of the day for failing to do what you should have been doing.
I'm trying to remember when that was introduced, when the severance package was introduced.
Yep. Well, it should be taken out of the system. As Turkey's voting for Christmas, you're not going to get any popular votes there. But anybody that's worth the substance, then they will get re-elected.
Yeah.
There's some voices in there. They've still got to make their maiden speech. And they've been sitting picking up £80,000 a year, and you take that over 5 years, not a bad little earning.
But how had this started, paying, if you like, a living wage, although for many people that's more than a living wage, came about because there was a kind of public, a public voice that said we shouldn't just have rich businessmen as MHKs, because, as you know, years and years ago, most MHKs, it was a part-time job. They were businessmen who had businesses, and they fitted at being an MHK around it. So I think it possibly the ministerial system came in. They decided to tie MHK's salary to the civil service spine, and that's when, if you like, this pay level came in. And because it's tied to the civil service spine, it will go up.
But the, that will be tied to it and it will go up. But these are elected MHKs, not career civil servants. And they are still on a five-year contract. Now, if you were to put the civil servants on a five-year contract and say, I'm sorry, but there's no redundancy after you've, you've fulfilled that, then there'd be a hue and cry. But these people here now are expecting this. It's what you would term, when you hear a lot of them, I'm entitled to it. They're not entitled to it because they fulfilled, good, bad or otherwise, the 5 years that they were elected by the public. And they should then, well, if they're any good at the jobs, they'll go back in. If they weren't, then they deserve to be deselected. So I think this should be done away with.
Right.
And or reduced down to the normal government imposed redundancy rates.
Okay.
Not an enhanced redundancy rate. They're not redundant. They've come to the end of their contract. And that's how it should be.
Well, as you say, no MHK, no House of Keys or Tynwald Court is got, well, House of Keys for that matter. Would you think they would come to that? Who would impose that then, Howard? If that were to happen, where would that have to come from?
From what they call civil service. But even then, as I say, that's turkeys voting for Christmas. And but the MHKs are elected representatives. And by giving them the extra wage, which I think was in about the 1960s, 70s, because previous to that, there was no ministerial section.
Well, it was a board system, wasn't it?
Yeah, they're on the boards. But, of course, things have moved on in the financial system, the key game and everything like that. But that's what hundreds of civil servants within government are employed for. The MHKs are virtually just the spokespeople. And as we've seen in many cases, the civil service will override what the MHKs are wanting to try and implement. Some of the ones that do have a voice, they'll get overridden. But then who's running the island?
Do you think we should ever go back to that system then, when being an MHK was a part-time job, and it didn't pay that much?
Well, I'm not saying it's, but the fact that they get a redundancy afterwards, they should take on. If you've got a job, a contract, and that's what it is, they must have an employment contract of some sort. The company that you'd be running, if you had a contract for 3 years, the 3 years was up, the job was done, you didn't get half of your wages or contract price because you were no longer employed by the Manx government.
Right.
So it's a farcical system where they're getting 6 months' pay. There's nowhere in anywhere in the private sector, I shouldn't imagine that would happen.
Okay. All right. Howard, we appreciate it. Thanks for calling today.
Take care.
Cheers.
Bye now.
Okay. I want to go to, well, actually here, let me just make way here because Terry Lydiard is going to enter the building. Terry, good afternoon.
Hello, Andy.
Well, Manx Airlines comes up quite frequently, and let's just make the case here. You're the man who started Manx Airlines, is that right?
Yeah. Long time ago now.
When was that?
1982,
1st of November. So that, 1982?
Yeah.
So is that really 43 years ago?
I think so.
43 years ago.
I only came to the island for 2 years maximum. Still here.
My word. Manx Airlines is held in such high status by people, remembering the good times, and
don't talk about the chocolates.
It can't just be rose tinted glasses. Manx Airlines wasn't a brush that didn't sweep. It did a very good job. And just tell me again, Terry, how many people were employed by Manx Airlines?
About 750, 760 on the Isle of Man, and then probably 1400 altogether in the British Isles.
And at what levels? I mentioned before flight attendants, and I don't denigrate flight attendants, but from flight attendants through to people who serviced engines as well, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, basically, we're really bound pretty well by market conditions, and particularly probably by more than market conditions, because for a lot of people, those already skilled, particularly pilots, engineers and so forth, it meant quite a move in their life to move over to the Isle of Man, many of whom had never been here before. So so there were good, well-paid jobs, and we did have a lot of internal progression. For example, several of our cabin crew were accepted for our pilot training courses and finished up as pilots, not only with Manx Airlines and British Regional, but with people like Cathay Pacific, British Airways. We've sort of groomed young crew all over the world. And same with engineers, because engineers build up impressive licenses, and then they're equipped to go off to bigger airlines, which is fine. You know, you want people with ambition. So it was quite a big operation. But of course, in fact, Andy, you know, we started off with three little aircraft, but by the 2000, we actually were the biggest regional airline in Europe, just operating from this little Isle of Man. So it became quite a big operation. We became the 1997, we won the Regional Airliner of the World Award as the best regional airline in the world for one. That's only for 1 year, of course, but. So it became quite a big operation.
So Terry, what were the circumstances of Manx Airlines disappearing? I think there were corporate takeovers, but was there ever an option for the government to purchase Manx Airlines?
Well, there was. Listening to your earlier comment, contributor, it obviously came over the feeling that Manx Airlines must have gone bust or must have ceased operations. But in fact, it wasn't that. It was the fact that we were getting quite big. We came to the stage where British Airways were feeling nervous about some of our operations competing with their own. But most of all, that we had six valuable slots at Heathrow Airport. British Airways were desperately running short of slots. And by buying the airline, the slots came with it. That was really their main interest.
Well, as you say, you were a very financially healthy company and getting bigger. So you were a victim of your own success in that BA wanted to snap you up.
I'm afraid we were, really, yeah.
So just going back, was there ever an option for Manx Airlines to go into public ownership for the Isle of Man government to take a share in the company?
Well, when we first started, we did our chats with the government, because the government had to take a fairly brave decision, because most of the services to the island were operated by either Air UK or Bridge Midland Group. And we came along saying, look, we want to do it. No, we're not an airline. We haven't got any aircraft. We haven't got any staff. We haven't got any headed notepaper. And they were good enough to give us to support us. Not financially, of course. We never had a single penny, nor did we ever ask for a single penny out of the Isle of Man government. But we wanted their support in as much as it would be good for the island. And it was happening at the time when 82, you know, the financial sector was just really beginning to take off. When we first said we would come in, we did say that our intention would be to privatise, to put the airline on the market at some point to allow Manx residents or anybody else to buy shares. And that happened. That happened in 1998. Because we got to a size where we felt it's good to do it. A little after that, it became fairly common knowledge that in the airline industry that BA were circling to see if they could snap up any slots.
Right.
And at that point, we said the government was concerned that that could affect us, or that we might give in to high monthly offers and sell the slots, and therefore and go off to operate to Gatwick or somewhere. But what we did to assuage their concerns, we talked about offering them a single share in Manx Airlines, a golden share, which, although it was only one in number, had the option to veto any move to sell off the slots at Heathrow. That was a big deal. Quite an important thing. Because those were they were a valuable asset, as could be seen. But so we offered them for £1, one share for £1 to the government. But they decided they didn't want to take it up, and so we sailed on then for a bit longer until British Airways. We had so many owners in the City of London, because we were a listed company by then. And of course, so a lot of our shareholders would be banks, insurance companies, various big names like that. And so gradually they were buying up shares, as they want to do, until they came to a situation where they could basically form a majority should mm-hmm. British Airways want to come in. And British Airways came in. A lot of them, the shares at that time had gone up. I think they were trading in the sort of high 30s, 30 pences, that is. And eventually British Airways put in an offer of £1.20 per share.
Wow.
So, of course, there were big money to be made for city institutions.
Terry, do you miss those days?
I don't. I miss the company, the staff. We had wonderful staff. I don't always miss everything. There was always a feeling, because when we got quite a big operation in Europe and so forth, I was always conscious, we all were conscious, of the fact that at any time in 24 hours, there'd probably be 8,000 or 9,000 people in the air on one of our aircraft, assuming that they were operating totally safely in totally proper environment and so forth. So that just took a little, it was never a great worry, but it's always something you felt in the back of your mind that you were responsible for an awful lot of people's lives and well-being. But I do miss, in all honesty, I hardly ever go to the airport now because it's a sad place. It was very vibrant and fun. Yeah,
and just finally looking back, it's obviously times have changed enormously. COVID changed things enormously. The world of aviation has changed. How do you view the airport, first of all? How do you view the aviation industry?
Well, it's really this locally. It's showing the results of what people called open skies, and which most people didn't know what an open sky was, or they thought the alternative to open skies was closed skies. And whereas all open skies meant was that restrictions on who could operate certain routes were lifted. But the fact is that it happened first of all in the States. And there's talk about how hugely these domestic airline operations in the States grew as a result of that. But these are nearly always on routes that were carrying hundreds of thousands at times every year, of passengers every year. And so then in that sort of situation, you can compete, you can have a competitive market, and it can be healthy for everyone. But when you're covering a home market of only 70,000, well, there's less than that, 50,000, 60,000 people in those days. There just isn't the revenue to support more than one carrier in most cases. It happened with Steam Packet in the days of the, the Heysham operation when that first started.
Oh, Manx Line.
Manx Line, yeah. And I mean, both good shipping companies, but, you know, the cake is only so big. And so for a lot of cases, they talked about the success in the States of the growth through of open skies, but it was rarely mentioned that it's 90 different airports in the United States lost services completely after a year or two of open skies. The trouble is, I think over here, there was a certain thought that, well, if we can get the big airlines in, like Ryanair or EasyJet, prices will come tumbling down. Well, they haven't. There have been some good benefits. But overall, what we've seen is we've lost far more services than we've gained. We used to, Manx Airlines by itself used to be operating 15 different routes out of the Isle of Man. And then you had Jersey European with quite a network of services. But the point is, then you've got, for example, Citywing were doing 4 services a day to Belfast, which was a very good route for business wise. So EasyJet move in, and because the government couldn't stop them or wouldn't want to. And so they immediately came on to 2 services a week. And CityWing just couldn't obviously compete with that. So it disappeared. Same thing, they had their services at Staverton down in Gloucester. So EasyJet started the Bristol service from here. again, only two a week, which doesn't help a community, an island community. Frequency is the real thing. I mean, towards the end of the, we were operating, the island was enjoying 9 services a day to London. And what is it now? All gone.
Yeah.
It's sad.
All right.
But the main thing is for the people we had. They're just some fantastic staff over here.
Okay. Terry, we appreciate it. Thanks for calling today, and call back anytime. You're always welcome.
Okay,
good to hear from you. 19 minutes before one, we are. It's worth mentioning, by the way, that the aforementioned Paul Quine, the ex-MHK, was the Manx-born pilot of the last flight, the honour of operating the last Manx Airlines flight. Birmingham to Ronald's Way was Captain Paul Quine, who was in command of the ATP. A Golf Mike Alpha November Bravo landed at Ronald's Way at 8:10 at night, Saturday, 31st of August, 2002. Remembering Manx Airlines, and thanks to Terry Lydiard, the man who started it.
Save 17% on the Loganair Tartan Sale with promo code SALE17. Book now at loganair.co.uk. TCs and exclusions apply, subject to availability.
Let's get some boots on the ground for this year's most memorable charity challenge. The 50K Challenge Walk on Sunday the 19th of April in support of Hospice Isle of Man and the island's firefighters. This special non-competitive event brings together community, endurance and breathtaking scenery from Peel to Ramsey for two really great causes. To find out more and to enter, visit hospice.org.im/charitywalk. Kindly supported by Canaccord Wealth.
Remember when you used to get business advice from your bank manager? Stiff upper-lipped pillars of the community whom you called sir? Nowadays, you can get all the advice on every business issue from the friendly, down-to-earth chaps at Crow Isle of Man. And some of the chaps are even women. Imagine! Crow Isle of Man. Global presence, local knowledge.
Crow Isle of Man. Crow.im.
In life, we plan for birthdays, anniversaries, and holidays. But what about planning for the unexpected?
I've worked hard all my life. I want to make sure everything's in place for my family.
Man Benham understands. We specialise in enduring powers of attorney, mental health receiverships, and are there for you when mental capacities decline.
Thanks to Man Benham, your legacy is protected.
Secure your family's future today. Visit manbenham.com, because peace of mind is the best legacy.
TE Cabin provide new memorial stones, grave renovations, new inscriptions and fire hearths. Visit us at Hope Street, Castletown or at Broadway Douglas or call 844-440. TE Cabin, here when you need us.
Are you a small charity here on the Isle of Man? Are you looking for volunteers, hoping to raise awareness and chasing those crucial pounds and pennies to support your work? Well, Manx Radio can help. You could be our next 1-3 Charity of the Week. With daily on-air coverage, podcast and social media promotion, we can help support you and those you help. Just email the numbers 123@manxradio.com and listen out for the feature each weekday between 1 and 3pm. The Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
David, I found David now. Hi, David.
Hi, mate. I just got in the post there, which is a thing about the Chief Minister's talking about our security for energy.
Yeah.
I've just got my oil letter from Manx Petroleum, if you don't mind me saying that. They're saying that the likelihood is the costs are going to go up in the next supply they get. So we need to monitor that, what the supply is and how dear it was. So that's a job for the OFT and government itself. But I wanted to say there, Andy, too, it made me think about the MEA regarding the panels, and we get 9p back now. So if they're putting the price of electricity up, shouldn't we get a better return for our investment in the panels we put back into the grid?
Well, you would have thought so, and somebody somewhere is going to decide what that price is, but we don't quite know who does.
No, and the other thing is, too, and which is they need to sort of get their finger out on, is DEFA, is to get those schemes running now, which are going to help our residents on the island to improve their situation for their energy supply. You know, we need to step away from insulation and stuff like that. That's an old hat now. We need to talk about all sorts of things. By giving some assistance to people who are putting panels on the roof but maybe can't afford a battery. Because I know a number of people have bought PV panels now, like I did last year, and I'm looking forward to the summer, because when the sunlight was on, or it just needs sunlight, it still had to be bright, you're making electricity and you're running your property when you're not there or you're there, and you can actually survive, you know what I mean? Make that a little bit more comfortable. It's never going to be really comfortable, but it will be in the future. If where the government could make those decisions, where all the properties have got, all the schools have got, put panels on. Because I'd love you to get on Mr. Wanningberg from the Manx Utilities to find out, A, how they're getting on, anybody supplying land to them, or letting them have land to put PV panels on to supply electricity.
Yeah, they put out that appeal, didn't they, a couple of weeks ago. They want people with, how much was it? Yep. Was it 5 acres or more or something?
Oh, yeah. A nice, no trees around and whatever, open space. And there is a lot of it. There's a lot of it in stock, which the government own themselves. So you just need the network to be close to it. And then you can get a plug in and we can all help each other out. Right. And the final thing I was just going to say is that a couple of weeks ago, I actually went to the prison, and don't be shocked, I went for a visit, and I went to see, we were invited, there was a number of people who were invited anyway, in companies who'd supported the prison for prisoners, their workshops to get sitting guilds qualifications. And I just want to put out there, I was really impressed, and I've been before, I was a political member years ago for the prison and home affairs under June Watterson, and I was surprised really, they're still cracking on. And I'd love to find out where, if some people would come on sometime and say, not that they've been to prison, but they've had a success when they went into the prison there, but got a qualification and got their lives improved.
Yeah.
Because we don't push that out enough as well, Andy. Because they're not all criminals, total criminals, you know what I mean?
Well, the fact is, we've talked about this many times, there are some people who are hardened criminals, there are villains, and then there are people who've put a foot wrong, maybe 2 feet wrong, and they've ended up in custodial with a custodial sentence. But they're not criminals, they're not bad people, they've just done a couple of bad things sometimes.
Yeah, and community service, but I haven't seen a lot, and I met two governors that night. There was the governor of the prison and the governor for the Isle of Man, and I didn't get to one, but I got to the other one, the governor for the prison, and I said to him, really, you've got to be doing something for these community service groups, because they do support the community. They don't support government departments or whatever, or they shouldn't be anyway. That's an anti-competitive practice. But they should be supporting the communities, that they plant trees, cut a bit of grass, amenity sites, do things which will support the say the local authorities who need a bit of support. You know, we can't do everything.
All right.
But if they go on.
All right, we appreciate it. David, thanks for calling today. How much power are you generating, by the way?
I knew you were going to say that. I mean, because I've been waiting that long now, my iPad's gone off. But I think I had a kilowatt.
Right.
But don't forget, it's been miserable, hasn't it?
Right, thanks for calling.
Bye.
Cheers now.
Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
St. German's Cathedral Foundation for Music and the Arts' overarching mission is to promote, preserve, and grow the musical and artistic life of the cathedral, support young musicians, and enrich the cultural life of the Isle of Man through high-quality choral and musical activity offered as a gift to our island community. For more information, visit cathedral.im.
This advert is brought to you by Kell Properties.
Easter Sunday and Monday, catch the Gravel Glen Railway Easter Bunny trains from 10 to 4:30, running from Len Cowan Station to see the Easter Bunny at the Sea Lion Rocks Tea Rooms, with free Easter eggs for children. Enter our free Easter egg hunt to win a £100 voucher for the Isle of Man Steam Packet Company, afternoon tea for four at Milltown, a giant Easter Bunny, and a year's family pass to Gravel Glen Railway. Purchase tickets in advance at ggr.org.uk. Supported by your nation station, Manx Radio.
The previous message was brought to you by QVH, the island's premier serviced offices and co-working space in the heart of Douglas. Call 639-940 for more information or visit qvhpremieroffice space.com.
Direct cremation is just that, An affordable and simple cremation without all the costs associated with a funeral service. Find out more by visiting directcremation.im or phone Direct Cremations on 478422.
Manx Solar Electrical offer Wise solar and heating solutions for home and business. We're the Isle of Man's trusted experts in solar panels, Tesla battery storage and energy efficient heat pumps, helping you power your home sustainably and save money. Call 665800 or visit manxsolarelectrical.com.
Come to Manx Solar Electrical.
Our island's energy reimagined.
When you want the best.
Tune in and chill out with Chris Pearson on Manx Radio.
As the weekend fades and the night draws in, slow it down with the Chill Out Show.
The city feels clean this time of night.
The Sunday Chill Out. Chris Pearson, Manx Radio.
The Manx Radio Chill Out Show. Sunday evenings from 7.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Sue's been waiting forever, Sue. Hi, Sue.
Hi. Hi, Andy.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Sorry, you make me laugh now. I just wondering, I've been listening to the radio, the news, and it's also on social media this morning, about vet prescriptions, you know, when you get a prescription from the vet.
Yeah.
And they're going to be capped. And I was just wondering, are Manx, or I say Manx, or Isle of Man vets going to abide by this new ruling or not? Because every time, you know, we do anything, it says UK vet.
Yeah.
Or UK vets. Well, the Isle of Man doesn't come under UK anymore. We're classed as international.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if our vets were going to follow, you know, just carry on charging whatever they want for their prescriptions or...
Well, at the moment, there's been no confirmed announcement that the Isle of Man's going to introduce the same vet prescription fee cap. So the UK's introduced it. They're operating under different systems. The Manx government will have to decide to follow the changes. That UK cap is £21 for the first prescription and £12.50 for additional medicines. And the vets must also tell their pet owners they can buy the medicine online, which is often cheaper. This is for the UK. These changes are being introduced following a major investigation in the high vet costs, and they're expected to come into force later on this year. But at the moment, we haven't had a word. We'll certainly ask the government to see what's going to happen. What do you think should happen, Sue?
Well, I think we should follow what they're doing in the UK. I mean, I've been away. I've just come back to the island to live. I've been back a year now, born and bred here, but I went away for work. And having three dogs as well, the vet bills over in England are extortionate. They really are over the top. I think not only should there be a cap on the prescriptions, but there should also be a cap on what the vets can charge as well, because some people just can't afford it, especially pensioners and people like that. So, you know, I think the Manx government should follow.
Have you got pet insurance?
I have on one of my animals. The other two are oldies, and it wouldn't be worth it. Now,
because the story, Sue, is that, I mean, lots of vets will tell you that that this is due to the fact that lots of big companies are going in, buying up veterinary practices, and that's when the price starts to go up and up and up, and then obviously they're going to encourage you to get pet insurance, and suddenly there you are, you're spending a couple of £1,000 a year on insurance and vet fees and what have you.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people now aren't insuring their dogs because the insurance is very high. I mean, I'm in with one which fortunately isn't that high, but it's not one of the high. They have a bronze, silver, and gold, you know, and I think I'm on the silver for my nutcase dog I've got.
Oh, yeah.
It has to be insured. But then again, pet insurance, as you say, are really, really high. And then if you have a dog that has an ongoing illness, say diabetes or something like that, they will only insure them for the year. After that, you don't get insured. So people now, I think, are putting the money away in their accounts, separate account for their animals.
And the thing is that nobody wants to disadvantage their pets, you know, whether it's a dog or a cat, whatever it is, you know, a dog and a cat, they're friends for life, as long as they live anyway.
Well, I'm a sick person, live by myself, my dogs and my children. I know people think I'm mad, but they are. They're my company and they're there for me. They're always there. And I would give anything to make sure that they're okay, you know. And sometimes you think, oh my God, I've got to go to the vet. I mean, I consider myself quite lucky. We won't mention any vets' names, but I'm with one of the vets that are very good here, very good price-wise and everything. So I'm very lucky to have got in with that particular vet. But I know some of the other ones, especially in the south of the island and in Douglas, their prices are absolutely extortionate.
Okay. All right, Sue, I don't think you're mad, by the way, loving your pets. I think that's fantastic. Thanks for calling today.
Okay, thanks, Andy.
Cheers, now.
Bye.
Got to go. Got to get out of here. Back tomorrow, Wednesday. And an open line tomorrow on Max Radio. In the meantime, thanks to Chris on the phones. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. WINT.